Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome to our session, Raiders of the Elevated Token. My name is Raymond Convalius. I'm a consultant from the Netherlands. And I'm specialized in Windows 8 security. I do a lot of implementations at larger customers, and I do various products besides Windows. And I wrote a couple of books. My first book was kind of a mistake. That's why it's not on the slide deck. Windows Vista for XP Professionals. Would be good to skip that on my slide deck. So the next one was more successful. Currently, it's no longer available because Windows 7 is over and we're about to go to Windows 8.1.
And my name is Zelda Leskaya. I'm just around the corner from Sydney, Australia. And I'm also an MEP, specialized in security. I do many ethical hacking. I do work for Chem Technologies at the moment. And hopefully you're going to learn a couple of new stuff after our session. Raymond?
So the agenda for this session will be user account control, probably the most hated feature ever in Windows Vista. What it actually is, what it does, and it never went away. Microsoft is doing more stuff than ever with user account control. And I will show that during some demos. And I will dig into the new feature in Windows 8 called App Containers. And then we'll dig a little bit into browsers and how browsers are leveraging those features in user account control to get a safer browser experience in Windows.
Just before I forgot, we got a couple of presents to give away. We got some O'Reilly eBooks. And from Chem Technologies, I'm going to give some load balancers away. So if you hang towards the session, towards the end, if you ask good questions, I got around 6-7 presents to give away, okay? So please don't forget to ask questions after the session. So we got presents for that. So as Raymond said, UAC, user account control. It was the most hated feature in Vista, but it became really useful in Windows 7. So what is it in Windows 8? What are the changes in Windows 8? We're going to cover this, but please keep in mind the UAC solution is a solution to run most applications with the standard user rights. It's designed mainly for software developers to create applications that run with standard user rights. There is one important thing to keep in mind, okay? UAC is not a security boundary. So it will not replace an antivirus or firewall. It's designed to create, Raymond?
Designed to create safe applications. And actually, developers hate it. As this statement already said, it's to encourage software developers. On my flight back from America last year, I did this presentation. I was sitting next to a developer, and I told him I was presenting about user account control. And the one thing he said to me was, how dare you present about user account control? Because he's still furious about it. What is it doing? Well, what it does has to do with users on your computer. We all like the standard user, the harmless one, the one that has no administrative privileges, cannot make changes to his own systems. Does its work, goes home. We're fixed. But not all users can be that standard user. Especially not at home, you have to make the changes to your own system. And what Windows 7 does, what Windows Vista does, what Windows 8 does, is that if you are a member of the administrators group, you become an administrator in what's called admin approval mode. So before you get your administrative privileges, you have to do something. At first, you get kind of standard user rights, and then you have to access something before you get all the administrative rights that you need to make changes to your system. The original administrator is still there, the default administrator. But it's disabled by default in Windows 8, and it's still there in Windows Server 2012 and enabled, alive and kicking. So what is happening when you log on? Your user token is created. Your user token consists, it's an object that's used to enter all the objects on your system. And this user token consists of your security ID, that's you in Windows, the ID that presents you. There is your group security IDs, and what Windows does, it analyzes all the groups that you are a member of, And if you are a member of any of these administrative groups, like the administrators group, it kind of takes them away from your access token by flagging them. All these groups get the deny flag. And by using the deny flag, if you try to enter, if you try to do something with an object in Windows that requires you to be a member of any of these groups, you're denied access. Something like that is also happening to your rights and privileges in your user token. You only get the rights and privileges that a standard user gets. Every other privilege is taken from your user token. So if you have the privilege to act as part of the operating system, it is taken away. The only things left are here in this list, like you are able to shut down the system, nothing else. So that's what we call the restricted user token. It's a user token that has lost all its administrative privileges. And I can show you that from my system that's running here. On this system, I have a Process Explorer running. And I made a few changes to its configuration to make sure that you can see what I'm doing. So if I now start the command prompt without the consent UI, this is the command prompt with the restricted user token. And you can tell, if you look here in Process Explorer and go to the properties of this process, in the security tab, it shows you the user token. And here you already see that I am a member of the domain users group, domain admins group, and it's flagged for deny. So this is me, but I'm not a member of the domain admins group for this process. Now, if I start a command prompt as an administrator, I get a consent UI. You all know this prompt. When I say yes, I get a new process. And this new process, if I look at it, and I look at its properties here, you'll see that I am a member of the domain admins. Hello. And it's mandatory. So I'm just a member of domain admins in this process. I can do more. And it's not just the group memberships that are changed. If you look at the bottom here, there is kind of a long list of privileges here. And if I go to the other process, there is just this very short list that only shows the user privileges that you have as a standard user. For some reason, my control... Right, here it is. Doesn't work. So, you're restricted. In earlier versions of this presentation, I didn't use Process Explorer. I was using a tool that's built in Windows called WhoAmI. WhoAmI is the perfect tool to list your user token. But something strange was going on there. Let me show you. I have the standard user command prompt here. Whoa. Clicked on the wrong. Okay. This is the standard user command prompt. And if I use WhoAmI, / all, this will list my user token. So it lists who I am. It starts with me and my security ID. And then it lists all the group that I am a member of. So here it says I'm a member of the group built-in administrators used for deny only. But now something strange is going on. This is the restricted token. So, but I am a member of the domain admins. And it says the domain admins is not flagged for deny. So I started doubting about my documentation and stuff and used the tool one more time. And then I thought, well, let's send an email to Marko Zinovic. He might answer my mail. Well, he did. And you know, his first answer was, did you use Process Explorer? No, I didn't. But after checking with Process Explorer and finding out that the documentation was right, this seemed to be a bug ever since Windows Vista. So probably in the next version that we'll see by the end of the month, this bug will be fixed. Until that time, we cannot really trust WhoAmI, because WhoAmI will show you a lot of information that might be incorrect about groups that are flagged for deny. The consent UI is this dialog box that takes you in the bridge from the restricted token to the elevated token. And it's not just a dialog box, it's a dialog box that forces you to do some user interaction in what's called the secure desktop. And the secure desktop is a special modus in Windows that takes you to a modus where only input from your keyboard and mouse is accepted. No script can click yes for you. It's only the keyboard and mouse that can click yes for you. And then you're getting to the elevated token. Now, this consent UI wasn't really a loved feature in Windows Vista, so many people were turning user account control off. And in Windows 7, we got this nice slider that's also used to turn to make changes to how UAC behaves. And you now get a new default in Windows 7. Windows 7 says, we will show you the consent UI when you need to elevate for programs that are not Windows management tools. So if it's a Windows management tool, it will elevate, but it will not show you the consent UI. If you need elevation for any other executable, it will show you the consent UI. If you use the slider to go to the upper level, you go back to Windows Vista mode. It will always prompt you to elevate, even when you're using a Windows management tool. The option do not dim the display, that was one that was useful in the Windows Vista day when some of us were still using old CRT displays. And those displays couldn't always handle the move to your secure desktop. And then you used do not dim the display. And this also meant that Windows would not turn to the secure desktop. So if you use do not dim the display, any script can click yes for you. It's less secure. Never notify, that's the one that has changed behavior. If you choose never notify in Windows 7, you turn off user account control. Which means, if you log on in Windows 7 after setting this setting to never notify, you will not get a restricted token. You will get administrative access immediately, and you will never have to elevate again. In Windows 8, never notify doesn't mean that. In Windows 8, you log on and you still get a restricted token. If you elevate, you can elevate, but it will never show you the consent UI. And sometimes it won't elevate when you require elevation, but you will not notice. So some things may break. You can also configure user account control from group policy, and that has some more granular controls, because in group policy you can also configure user account control for the standard user. So that standard users who are by default prompted for credentials, if they try to elevate, they can be shown an access denied dialog. For built-in administrators, there is no user account control by default, but you can turn it on if you use group policies. And you can also use the group policies to change the behavior for the members of the administrators. If you are a member of the administrators group, you are by default prompted for consent, so you can click yes or no. That might be a good idea, but you can say prompt for credentials. So an administrator can be prompted for credentials each and every time he requires elevation. But is it a good idea if you have someone in your company who is an administrator and might require elevation like 30 times a day to enter his credentials each and every time he requires elevation? This might be an opportunity for shoulder surfing. Then there is one option there that says elevate without prompting. And this is the option that is enabled by Windows 8 if you choose to never notify. It is not disabling UAC in Windows 8. It is elevating without showing the consent UI.
Okay. Now let me show you what Raymond was trying to say. First of all, just a reminder, number?
Five, yes. Six, seven.
I'm going to do the UAC demo, right?
Let's open the UAC. We go to settings.
I think we all know this since Windows 7. Windows 7 was a big fix compared to Windows Vista because we could control when we were going to be prompt. I'm not going to go through everything as Raymond wants. I want you just to keep in mind that bringing this bar to never notify used to turn off UAC in Windows 7, but it is not turning it off in Windows 8. Alright, please keep this in mind. And about the rest, Raymond is going to show you a few other stuff. Now I want to also show you what Raymond has
said about.
I'm just going to say run. I go to gpedit, as we all know. From here, I'm going to go to, I'm already there. So computer configurations, Windows settings, security settings, local policies and security options. As you can see, we have a couple of UAC options from here. And the most important one is, again, the user control, run all administrators in admin approved mode. This is enabled by default. So what is if you disable that as you did in Windows Vista, as you did in Windows 7? Keep in mind, you will be by your own. Microsoft is not creating any applications they assume by default you have UAC on. So if you turn off UAC, you might get an application which will not be checked and you will be by your own. So it's not security checked for you. All right? So this is a very important thing to keep in mind.
Microsoft, in fact, says if you turn off user account control Windows 8, your operating system is no longer supported. So if you start calling the support desk, and the first thing they will ask you probably is, did you turn off user account control? If you say yes, you will get a new question. Will you please turn it on? Then we can help you.
So this is a very important thing. Yes, question there?
I will show you about that later.
We got it. And we will repeat
the
question.
A few more minutes, and then we'll show you how you can fix that.
So, just quickly, to show you, we have the user control settings for admin approval to built-in administrators. And this is, as he showed you again, for the computer default admins. Then we have the user control settings for UI access applications, for behavior, for detecting, and etc. But the most important thing was the, you know, turning off both. You can turn it off from here, but again, please don't forget you'll be by your own.
Yes. So this list was also mentioning something called UI access application. UI access applications in Windows are special kind of applications that can be used to be an alternative for mouse and keyboard access. An example of this is the remote assistance utility that's in part of Windows that you can use as an administrator to help someone on a computer remotely. So, but this is a special kind of application because those applications, they can act as a mouse and keyboard in some situations. But especially for remote assistance, we found out that it wasn't always the way we liked it to be. As an example, if I am an administrator and I want to help Erdl,
I need help. I send a remote request.
So I will send a request to him, and I want to connect to his computer and take it over. So you click yes.
I click yes.
And I try to fix his computer, being the administrator. But being the administrator, I am required to do some elevation and make some changes to his system. So I click run as administrator for the command prompt. And this is what will happen by default. I cannot enter the credentials. So this is the way it is by default. And this was the only way it was before Windows Vista SP1. In Windows Vista SP1, a new group policy option appeared. It said, user account control, allow UI access applications to prompt for elevation without using the secure desktop. Meaning that if I am doing a remote session like this, and I am required to use elevation, it will not show the secure desktop, and I should be able to enter my credentials. Now, this is exactly what happens here.
Oh.
I change the group policy. And now I can start helping Erdl. So I enter my administrative credentials, open a command prompt, and I can make my changes.
Halt. I told you that I'm doing ethical hacking, right? What is if I decide to be evil? What's going to happen now?
Well, I, as an administrator, I think I have control over his system. But this remote session isn't mine. It's his remote session. So if he is the evil remote hacker, he can end this session whenever he likes. So if he decides to be evil, he can close the session now. And this is what I'm left with.
I won't do that, right?
So he can walk away with my credentials on his system and do anything he likes with it, and I cannot do anything about it. So it's something to think about before you change the setting. Another user account control feature is file and registry virtualization. File and registry virtualization are there because older applications might be used to some practices that we are not considering best practices anymore, like storing information in your Windows folder or in your program files folder. And especially when Windows Vista was introduced, Microsoft thought it was a good idea to introduce something not to break all these applications immediately. And that's file and registry virtualization. What file virtualization does, that if such an application tries to write information, a file, to the Windows folder, it should not be denied access. The application should think that it worked. And what Windows does, it redirects the write operation to a different location, to a user-based location. And then when the application tries to get the information back, it will also redirect the read operation from this user-based location so that the application still thinks everything works. If something like that happens, the event is stored in the event log, so you can see it as administrator that file virtualization happened. Now, the same thing can be done for the registry for HK local machine software keys, but then the redirection takes place to HK current user. And you can disable it for the registry by using flags on certain registry entries. There is the reg.exe tool that you can use to flag certain locations not to redirect these write operations. Now, if registry virtualization happens, there is nothing registered in the event log. So for file virtualization, it is registered. For registry virtualization, it's not. Now, I can show you how this works. Let me see. Yes, I have it here. If I start a command prompt on my system without elevation, the command prompt is never virtualized. No program that's part of the operating system will be virtualized, because virtualization is a compatibility feature. And operating system components are supposed to be compatible. So by default, this is not virtualized. So if I try to create a file in the Windows folder from here, it should not work. Let me create a file a simple way. Echo test to a file in the Windows folder called test.txt. And this is, well, oh. I'm in the echo. I go to a file. I forgot something. Here it is. To a file. And access is denied now. This is supposed to happen because this is a process with a restricted token. I am virtually not a member of the administrators group now. Now, I can turn on UAC virtualization for this process from the task manager. Let's open the task manager. Go to the properties. Details, CMD, UAC virtualization, and now I can change the first virtualization state. Now I have file virtualization. I can enter the same command here, and it will just work. Command prompt just seems to have written something in my Windows folder. And if I look it up, like this, dear C Windows tar.txt, I see a file. Is this file really there? No, it's not. And I can show you, because if I now turn off file virtualization for this process, And I try to look up the same file. It's not there. The write operation went somewhere else. The write operation didn't go to the Windows folder. It went into what's called the virtual store. And the virtual store is a subfolder of my user profile. Now, it's the subfolder that I can find here. App data. Local. Virtual store. I have a Windows folder here. And if I zoom into the Windows folder, here's my text file. So I was redirected to this folder. And the fact that I redirected was recorded in the event log, so I can look it up. I can open the event viewer. And then go to Applications and Services Logs. Microsoft, Windows, and then there is a section called UAC File Virtualization. And here you will find the fact that something happened. So today I did this, and it told me, well, there was a file redirection taking place. So you can identify that applications are doing this after the fact. So this file virtualization and register virtualization is there to help older applications to still work. Now, Microsoft also introduced newer security features in Windows Vista, and especially this mandatory access control. And what mandatory access control does is it adds to the access control list that he already had by giving each and every process and each and every object in Windows an integrity level. The integrity levels are meaning that if something is running at a certain integrity level and tries to do something to something else with a different integrity level, if it is a higher integrity level, it's blocked. If it is a lower integrity level or the same integrity level, it can do things with the other process or object. So what happens now? If you log on as a standard user, you have the medium integrity level. Every process that you create and every file that you create gets the medium integrity level. Now, if you become an administrator, or if you elevate to be an administrator, your processes get the high integrity level, so they can do more at the system level, and system services are running at the highest integrity level, called system. They can do anything with your system. Now, if you start Internet Explorer, it will run at the low integrity level. And this means that if you are running Internet Explorer at the low integrity level, this process will not be able to make changes to your files, because the files, those are objects with the medium integrity level. If Internet Explorer tries to do something, it requires a folder with the low integrity level to be able to create files. Every other normal directory or folder on your file system will have the medium integrity level, and Internet Explorer cannot do anything with it. Now, Google Chrome is even going lower than the low integrity level by using the untrusted integrity level, creating a process that can virtually do anything on your system, but still they're able to run. So what happens when you log on? Your integrity level as a standard user is medium, and at the moment that you are asked for consent, your integrity level will be high for every process that you create from then. Internet Explorer uses these integrity levels. It uses the integrity levels when you are browsing on the internet. If you are browsing in untrusted zones. If you're browsing the internet, you will see this option that says enable protected mode. Protected mode means that if you start Internet Explorer, you are getting two processes. One process is a process running at the ordinary user level. It's a medium level process, and that's only the frame for Internet Explorer. It will manage the tabs. It will manage your favorites bar, it will show the command bar, but it will not show the content. The content is showing by a separate process. And if you're browsing the internet, this separate process is running at the low integrity level, making sure that if you are browsing the internet, this process will not be able to make any changes to your files or system. As soon as you start browsing on the intranet, or in a trusted zone, you will get a new process of the Internet Explorer. And this process is running at the medium level. And this is what you need when you are serving to your SharePoint site and you want to open a Word document from there. It will be hard to open a Word document with Word running at the low integrity level, because Word will not be able to save a file for you. So let's go back to the slide that I was just showing. What happens when you are browsing the internet and you want to download a file? Well, you are downloading that file, and the actual saving of the file is not done by this internet process. There is a helper process, and the helper process is running at the medium level. And this Internet Explorer process is only allowed to talk to the medium level process because there is a special layer around it. It's called the UI privilege isolation layer that allows this Internet Explorer process to only talk to its helper processes and to nothing else at the medium level. Now, I can show you how the integrity levels work and create a more secure system. I will use PSExe. To start WordPad at the low integrity level. So let's do it like this. So this is WordPad, and WordPad is running at the low integrity level, and I can tell from Process Explorer, because Process Explorer says here that I'm running WordPad, and it's running at the low integrity level.
Just a quick question. Everybody understands what PSExe does, right? PSExe from SysInternals? Can you please quickly remind?
I can.
PSExe, what is it doing again? I forgot.
I use it to run this process at the low integrity level. If I just start it, it will run at the medium integrity level. But now it's running at the low integrity level, kind of what Internet Explorer is doing. Now, what it does is, if I have this low-level process and I try to use it to save a file in my documents library, just like this.
Swimming.
This is what will happen. It's denied access. This is because my documents library is a medium-level folder, and this low-level process is not entitled to create files in that medium-level folder. I need a low-level folder to save this file. And there are low-level folders, especially for Internet Explorer. Let me find one for you. Let's go back to my user profile.
So what did you type?
App data. I'm going to do the app data folder in my user profile, and let's show you the directory. And these are the folders that are located there. There is a local folder, there is a local low folder, and there is a roaming folder. Now, you might understand what local low stands for. This is a folder at the low integrity level. And I can show you that using iCackles. iCackles. If I show the ACL for this folder, it says mandatory label, low mandatory level. You will not see a mandatory level where the mandatory level is medium, but you will always see if it's high or lower. So this is the low integrity level folder. And if I try to save my file from WordPad in here, it should work. Let's check it out. Let's go to my user profile. Move to local low and save the file. It's saved. Nothing wrong. Now,
question?
So does that mean that if you grant yourself permissions over the other folder on your profile, you will be able to write the document there?
If I
repeat the question.
Yeah, you emulate the same permissions.
If I can add the mandatory label, the low mandatory label to different folders, and then I should be able to save those files using a low level process, yes. You, excuse me, I didn't understand your question.
Is there a command line to override or change the current integrity level of a folder?
Yes, you can do that using iCackles. There is a possibility to change the mandatory level of a folder, and yes, you can do that using iCackles. Yes, you can. Now I have this low integrity level WordPad, and I can also start a medium integrity level WordPad. Let's move to my demo folder, start WordPad. And now I have WordPad. This is WordPad at the medium integrity level. And it shows from here that I now have a new WordPad here. And this is WordPad running at the medium integrity level. Well, let's try it again. Zoom in. Oh, okay. And this is WordPad at the medium integrity level. So, as WordPad is now running at the low integrity level and the high and the medium integrity level, there might be issues with these two communicating with each other, because low-level processes are not allowed to send messages to higher-level processes. And I can show you that in a very simple way. If I use the medium-level process, which is here, and I add a picture to it, here is me in Erdel.
Oh, Seattle.
Somewhere. Let's put it here. And then this is the low-level integrity level process. I can use drag and drop to transfer this photo from the medium integrity level to the low integrity level. Now, if I try to do the same thing the other way around,
do you think it's gonna work?
I cannot. Because the low integrity level process is not allowed to send messages to a higher integrity level process. I can also show you how Internet Explorer operates here. Let's close this and close this. Open Process Explorer and now start Internet Explorer here. This is Internet Explorer browsing the internet. And as you can see, I have two new processes here for Internet Explorer. Whoa.
Yeah.
And I did change something that I should have changed back. But okay. It shows the medium level process, which is the management process. And it shows Internet Explorer in an app container. I wasn't supposed to show this to you yet. So I have to make a little change here.
It's still my demo.
This is not the default for Internet Explorer. This is the default for Internet Explorer running as a modern UI application. But let me make a little change.
You didn't see that. That was my demo.
This is Internet Explorer when it's running in its default configuration. And as you see here, I have Internet Explorer at the medium integrity level and at the low integrity level. So this is how Internet Explorer is functioning on all your systems. Now, if I use Internet Explorer to browse to the intranet, I can go to my internal site here, which is running at my local server. This is my local server. And if I have a look here, you notice I have a new process here. And this new process for Internet Explorer is running at the medium integrity level. So this is the other Internet Explorer browsing to your internal network. Now, if your system is not a member of the domain, this intranet settings option is turned off by default. And Internet Explorer will start warning you if you start browsing, for instance, to the name of your local router at home, that it can enable intranet settings for you. Meaning that if you enable it, it will start running Internet Explorer at the medium integrity level to enter the site of your local router. But it will still keep running at the low integrity level when you're entering the internet.
So, if we browsing unsecured website, having this in this mode will save us to not get any virus, any cross-subscribe attacks on etc., right?
Well, it's a little bit more sophisticated than that. If you're browsing to a malicious website with Internet Explorer running at the low integrity level, it will at least keep this malicious website from changing your files. It's still able to read your files, and it's still able to write information to the low integrity level folders and use other processes to do something with it. Mm. If it's able to talk to other processes, because Internet Explorer is not allowed to talk to any process on your system. But it might leverage something like Java or your Adobe Reader or something else running at the integrity level, what it's supposed to talk to enter something malicious to your system. So this user account control, it's changing states sometimes to elevate or to go to a lower level or to go to the medium level. And especially when you're starting an executable, it will sometimes show you the consent UI and you have no clue what it's for. Well, if you start any program that is part of the Windows operating system and it's a known management tool, it will not show the consent UI, but it will elevate for you. So if you start computer management, for instance, you will get an elevated process, but it will not show the consent UI for you. It will show the consent UI for the command prompt or for regedit, because those are the tools that you can use to script something and change something on your system without you knowing about it. Windows will also try to elevate for you when it finds something in the name that makes Windows considering this executable an installer. So if it finds setup, install with a single L, or update in the name of the executable, Windows assumes this is an installer, and you need to elevate to run this. You can disable this feature, or you can use a shim to override it, or you can create something that's called a manifest. And a manifest is something that's, well, it's actually used by developers, it's used by Visual Studio to create an executable and tell Windows what to do with the elevation. And in the manifest, you can configure three levels of elevation for the executable. You can say as invoker, which means run this process at the same level as that you are running already. So if you are starting it from Windows Explorer, it will run at the medium integrity level. You can say highest available, which means that if you are a member of the administrators group, it will try to elevate. Or you can say require administration, and that means this executable will not run if you are not a member of the administrators group. A manifest is actually a text file. It's an XML file. And the XML file can be external or internal. An external manifest is just the XML file sitting there in the same folder next to the executable. And Windows should recognize it for you. The internal manifest is injected in the executable. Now, you can inject your own manifest by yourself by using mt.exe from the SDK. But if you do that and the executable was a digitally signed executable, you will break the signature. So that's something to remind yourself of. If you change it, if you inject it, you change the file and the checksum and the signature is broken. You can use sigcheck.exe, which is also a tool from sysinternals, to view the manifest and to check the signature of any executable that is running on your system. So if you have a program like this, let me show you. I have a simple file here, and let me change the view to extra large icons. I have my legacy app here, and let's change a little bit more. Okay. And I change the name of this executable. Let's see what happens. This is the icon, and I change the name, and I call it legacy app setup.exe. Now, did you see something happening to the icon? It has a shield. Having a shield means that if I try to start this executable, it will ask for consent. If I remove the shield by changing its name, you see the shield is gone. And I can just run the executable now without any issue. So the name might be important. Now, how can we fix this? If this certain string that we didn't like has to be part of this application, let's call it update. You see, I have a shield in it. I can fix it using a manifest. I have an example of a manifest here. Let's open it with Notepad. Okay. And as you can see here, this line is important. It says requested execution level. Says require administrator. Now, if I want this executable that has update in the name not to ask for consent, I have to change this to run as invoker. So I can change this line and replace require administrator with the string as invoker. And, oops, let's save it. And to make sure that this manifest belongs to this executable, I'll create a new folder. I call it test. I'll copy my executable to my test folder. I will copy the manifest. Also to my test folder, but I will call it the same as my executable, and I only have to change the extension to .manifest. So now I have a folder test with my executable, and let's change. And as you see now, it doesn't have a shield. And if I try to start it, it will just run. It will no longer require elevation. Now, one question? Yes?
So that's a trusted app now. If that app then spawn other processes, would they need their own manifest as well?
It can spawn other processes, but those processes.
Repeat the question, please, for
you. Oh, yes. The question is, can it spawn other processes? Yes, it can. But those other processes will run at the same level as this process. So this process is running with the restricted token, and every process that it spawns will also run at the restricted token. And if it tries to spawn a process with at a higher integrity level or run as administrator, you will be prompted for the consent UI. A number of installers do this already. If you install, for instance, the OPK, the deployment tools, halfway your installation process, it will ask you for elevation. And that's the moment when elevated processes will start to make changes to your system. You never know the how do I authorize if it is an authorized manifest? I think you can't, but it's not the manifest that will infect you. The manifest will change the behavior of the executable. And usually you will never see the manifest. It will be part of the executable. So you trust the executable, so you trust the manifest that's in it.
So hacker says binders. They wrap the program, they wrap the executable, and they plant the manifest inside. And that's why you're going to trust the antivirus, hopefully. It will detect it. There is a question.
Does that work around, for lack of a better term, does that work on third-party apps that may already have a manifest embedded in it?
Yes. The question is, will this manifest work on third-party apps? Sometimes it will. If this third-party app is not digitally signed, you can just replace its manifest with your own manifest, and it will work. If it was digitally signed, you might break stuff.
But if we don't inject it into the XE, then we don't break the digital signature.
But then it will ignore your external manifest. It will always use the internal manifest if there is one. Okay. And then it will ignore the external manifest.
And also in sys internals, there is a beautiful signature verifier as well, signature verifier. You can always verify the signature if you're really that curious. Okay, app containers. Do you remember the picture that we had, which you opened? So what is, let's say I'm in a PC, it doesn't have any, it has VAC turned off. What's going to happen if I try to open a file, a program?
This is what will happen.
So let's assume this is a desktop which UAC is turned off and you want to open a pretty picture up there or any other application. You will get this app can't open, the store can't open, the user can't control, as the store can't open the file as UAC has been turned off.
Yes, if you turn off UAC, you will not be able to run any Windows Store application. And there is something going on with the naming of Windows Store applications. They were formerly known as Metro, but I'm not supposed to. I didn't say that.
Edit.
Then Microsoft started calling it Modern UI applications. But while I was preparing for Tagged, I heard that was not the way I should call it. Those applications are called Windows Store applications. Then I asked the marketing guy at Microsoft, well, how should I call Internet Explorer? I cannot buy that from the Windows Store. Well, he said, that's the immersive browser. So you all know it now. It's the immersive browser and Windows Store applications.
It's the same host, different jockey, okay?
Now, Windows Store applications, they are not just applications that look differently. Those are the new citizens of your Windows systems. In the beginning, we had security ID for users. We had security IDs for groups. Then Windows 7 came. We got security IDs for services. And that's used by Windows for installing updates to the operating system. If you install an update for the operating system, it's not you, the administrator, that is doing the update. It's a service that's doing it for you. It's called the Windows Installer Service. And if you look at the access control list in Windows, it's referred to as the trusted installer. Now in Windows 8, we have something called app containers. And the app container is actually the security ID for the Windows Store application. So every Windows Store application gets its own security ID. And it's running in a sandbox. Running a sandbox means that it's running at the low integrity level, and as it has its own security ID, it's only entitled to enter its own folders and certain parts of the operating system. And that's it. So a Windows Store application is not allowed to enter your documents folder. It's not allowed to enter your network. It's not allowed to use your webcam or your microphone. If it wants to do something like that, it requires either a helper process that can do it for this application, and there are a number of helper processes available in Windows, or it requires to have capabilities, and capabilities are like what user groups are for users. If a Windows Store app has a certain capability, it is entitled to use, for instance, a webcam or use your internet connection. You can recognize the app container from the folder where it's in. You can see it on its ACL, and you can see it in Process Explorer. When you're running a Windows app, you can see that it has its own token, and in the token of the process, there is an app container. Now, app capabilities, there are a number of them, and those are required if this application has to do something without user interaction. So if your application is required to enter the internet or enter your internal network, it requires a specific capability to do just that. If the application should be able to index your music library, it must have the capability to access your music folders by itself without user interaction. As a developer, you are required by Microsoft to create an application with as little capabilities as possible for your application. Otherwise, you will not be entered in the Windows Store. So you must use as little capabilities as possible for your application. And if you want to use the special capabilities, like using the domain credentials, then Microsoft requires you to have a special developer account for the Windows Store. You must have an enterprise developer account to be able to enter applications in the Windows Store that use the domain credentials as a capability for your applications. So Microsoft is very strict about the usage of app capabilities. And you can view the capabilities for each application if you look at its permissions. And you will notice that some capabilities can be switched on or off by you as a user when you no longer trust this application at a certain level. So if your application is entitled to use your microphone, you can turn it off. If it's entitled to use your location, you can turn it off if you want to. If you no longer want this application to use this information. That's per application, yes. So each and every application lives in its own app container. It gets its own security ID. Yes, one more question.
This is probably not the best one for this, but for the store, the special developer account,
yes.
Does that also exist for company store?
No. The question is, does this restriction for the enterprise-level developer also exist for company stores? Now, if you develop your own line of business applications, you are not using the Windows Store. You're not publishing, so you don't have to go through this process at Microsoft to validate your application, so you can do whatever you like. But as soon as you have an application that you want to go public with, and it requires access to your domain credentials, then you must have this special developer account. Yes, thank you. More questions?
Is there a way to harvest the users will be able to install their own apps? Is there a way to harvest what capabilities the apps have?
Is there a way to harvest what capabilities the apps have? I haven't found a way yet. I'm looking forward to a tool. I hope that Mark Rosinovich will create something like that for us. Mark is presenting somewhere here, so he doesn't know I'm saying this. Well, if
the question is
about licensing and if you are required administrative access to install such an app. Well, if you install a Windows Store app, you are not required to have administrative access. That's an aspect of Windows 8. And you get the license with the app when you buy it from the store. So if you get the app from somewhere else, maybe there are possibilities to do that for line of business application, but I'm not a developer, so
then,
I cannot
then, answer the good that way question. Is to check the digital signature. You know, when you install the software, the digital signature usually will pop up, and you should rely on this. And if it's unknown and you don't know the source, it's good to double check the source.
Okay, but I can add to that. If you have a Windows Store app for your internal network, the app must be signed by a source that you trust. So it can be your internal CA that you trust that you use to sign those apps with, and then you can install them. There are PowerShell commandlets that are related to the AppX packages, that's what they are referred to, that you can use to install line of business application as modern UI apps outside of the store. But they must be digitally signed. You cannot install a Windows Store app that is not digitally signed. Well, probably that's why Visio is not yet a Windows Store app. I guess. Well, you can only install it if you buy it from the Windows Store. And as soon as you buy it from the Windows Store, you are licensed as from your Microsoft account as a licensed user.
I think RT is a good example for that. In Windows RT, all what you can do is rely on Windows Store. I'm pretty sure they're going to, 8.1 is coming very soon. There are a couple of blog posts which you can read, but I'm pretty sure, I hope they're doing something, or they're building something, I don't know at the moment. Yeah,
but that is a desktop application, that's not a Windows Store application, that's the difference. There are two different ecosystems now. There is Windows Store applications, which are the new breed of applications, and there is desktop applications. That's the way we used to use Windows applications. And exactly. So, app containers. I had to do a lot of research myself about app containers because Microsoft didn't really document app containers. All I could find when I was researching app containers is a very old article about Internet Explorer during the beta phase of Windows 8 that wasn't even valid anymore. So I had to do a lot of research myself. And wait a second before you switch. Let me log on again. But I was able to do a lot of reverse engineering to find out how app containers actually work and what they do. First, let's start a Windows Store app on my system. I'll start this.
Music.
This is a Windows Store app. And if you go to settings and permissions, it will show you the current. Now, let's see. Zoom, it doesn't work.
Not in this.
Okay. It will show you the capabilities of this application. So this application, it says, this app has permission to use your Windows credentials. It's Microsoft. They were allowed to. Your home or work networks, software and hardware certificates or a smart card, and your internet connection. So it has these capabilities, and you can show from the Process Explorer. Ooh, something goes wrong here.
You can take a screenshot.
No. You can see from Process Explorer what is really happening. If I go to Process Explorer and I look here, I see for most modern UI Windows Store applications, you will see that they are running as wwahost.exe. That's because those applications are running as JavaScript applications. Whoa. And how can I tell this is really my application? I can look at its properties. And especially when I look at image, I can see here that this is Microsoft Zoom Music that is running here. Let's see if I can do this. Yes. It's Microsoft Zoom Music. Now, if I look at its security properties, here it says what its capabilities are. Application package. It's entitled to use my internet connection and to use my music library as capabilities. Having the music library capability enables this application to create an index of all the music I have in my music library. If I move a little bit down here, it also shows that this app is running at the low mandatory level, and this is for all Windows Store applications. Whoa, my control button will not work. And here, this here is my app container. And it actually says so here that this is the app container. So this is the app container. And how can I further identify the app container? I can further identify the app container from where it's located. So if I open a elevated command prompt, I can go to a folder that's called Program Files, Windows Apps. And if I do it there here, it shows me all the apps that are installed here. And you might already notice that a lot of apps here have multiple versions installed. It's not just one version of the Zoom Music application here. It's all versions that were ever installed on this system. That's because when you install a Windows Store app on Windows 8, it's only installed there for you and registered for you. So if there are other users on that system, they might be linked to that older version of the music app and have to update themselves. This is also an issue when you are creating your image. If you are creating a Windows 8 image, you cannot start updating all those applications for the golden image. Now you first have to create the image, and then after deployment, the users will be able to update their applications themselves. You cannot do it for the users. Now if I look at one of these folders and the ACL that's created for it, let's try one of them. Microsoft, well, let's just pick one, Bing. Let's see if this is readable a little bit. You see that if I browse to its, there is one single security ID here. It says S1152. This is the app container. So this is the app container of this Bing application. And if you look through the rest of the access control entries, there is no entry for the users. So users are probably not entitled to go there by themselves. It's the app container that is entitled to go there, and then the user can use the app container to do different stuff. And this, you also see that the trusted installer is here. So if a user installs a Windows app, it doesn't install the user. It's not the user that's installing the app. It's the user calling the trusted installer to do the installation. One more question.
You're not calling this one. The trusted installer in Windows 7 was the owner of multiple files and registry keys.
Yes.
So when you have a user and you're trying to install it as a user and you want to get around that, you have to make the user, either you have to use the user right here with the user, which you cannot
It's the same in Windows. Well, the question is, this trusted installer, it's the owner of a lot of files and registry entries in Windows. And for some reason, you want to change that? No.
So no local admin, right?
Well, you're not supposed to. I'm sorry to say that.
I understand, yes, you're not supposed to, but...
Okay, but maybe we can talk about this after the session. Very interesting questions, but we're running out of time, so I have to move on.
We'll take it offline, okay?
We'll take it offline. One more thing that I want to show you about those applications. If I go back to my music application, it works. And I use it to browse to a certain folder. Here I said it says... Dutch bestand open means open the file. I start browsing my file system. And when I start browsing my file system, let's see if this works, yes. A new process is started. And this new process in this case is called the pickerhost.exe. And it's a process that's running at the medium integrity level. So if a Windows Store application tries to browse your file system, it calls another process, in this case the picker host process, to do the file browsing for you because the app container is not allowed to go outside of its sandbox. Okay. No. Browsers are extensively using user account control to be more safe. I already, by accident, showed you how IE10 in protected mode is running at the low integrity level. And there is an option in there that says enable enhanced protected mode. And enable enhanced protected mode means that from now on, start these processes to browse the internet in an app container. So it's even more strict. And then it's also a 64-bit process. But the app container for Internet Explorer is a special app container because if you look at its permissions in the application, it says this app is trusted and can use all system capabilities. So for some reason, IE is more trusted than other Windows Store applications and can do different things. And if I had enough time, I would show you that if you are running the immersive browser, the Windows Store version of IE, well, then it's running an app container until you start browsing your internal network, and then it will start a medium integrity level process in the immersive browser. And probably this is the only application that can run at the medium integrity level as a Windows Store application.
All right, very quickly, I want to show you one more demo here for you. Raymond was talking about Internet Explorer and other browsers. So what I'm going to quickly do is, I'm just going to open my Internet Explorer. I'm going to go to my settings, Internet options, settings. We go to advanced. From there, we go to security. And as Raymond mentioned, we have here the enhanced protection mode. I tick it, apply. Okay, it requires a restart. I'm restarting it. Now, I'm opening it again, and I want you, as Raymond showed it already a few minutes ago, but good he done it because the time is running out. Now, if you check Internet Explorer, we are running at medium integrity level. So, what about other browsers? I'm going to quickly open Firefox. Not everybody's using IE, right? And some of you, that, to be honest, don't like it at all. So, I opened Firefox. And if you check Firefox, it looks like it is running in a medium integrity level as well. Here we go.
So Firefox, as a process, is able to make changes to any file or folder that you own on your system. It's a single process. It's running at the medium integrity level. Actually, Firefox is having a fight with Microsoft because they want to create an immersive Firefox browser for Windows 8, but Microsoft forces them to use app containers for this application. And Firefox thinks it will break their add-ins. So that's why there is no Firefox yet as an immersive browser.
And very, very quickly, I want to show you also Google. What do you think Google is? Chrome? Come on. Not the perfect time. Process Explorer. I go quickly to admin mode. I close it with a mistake. Sorry. And Google Chrome. Chrome. Hey, untrusted. All right? So I'm just going to cut the demo here off. So you saw it yourself. You're going to make your own decision. Raymond, can you please wrap it up, please?
Yes. So we have seen that user account control is there for extra security. It's used by different options. It's there. It's still there. It's even more there than it has ever been. App containers are based on user account control. There is very little documentation in Microsoft about app containers currently. They promise that there will be more documentation in the near future. Currently, I have written 2 blog articles about app containers if you want to know more. You can use a lot of tools to investigate how app containers work. And just be reminded that these new applications will start a new era of new possibilities with a new way of using security for your applications. It's a different way of thinking for your developers. It's the next level in educating developers to be more secure in what they create for Windows systems.
All right, quickly, I'm going to switch to your computer. Guys, we got a beautiful session tomorrow morning. It's not in your books, so it just came. We just learned about it this morning as well. We're going to have a session tomorrow at 8:30 in room 272. We're going to have Marcus Murray and Hussein hacking us live in the session. Okay? And we're going to show you how Windows 8 can show you, how Windows 8 can help you to catch them. And I'm going to do some reverse engineering to find who they are. Okay, I already told who they are. But especially for the guys who's not here watching the session, please go. It's going to be also there. I'm going to show you how you can catch a hacker or the virus at least, okay, within 75 minutes. We have a couple of other sessions. Please have a look in the upcoming slides. I think you all saw enough of the slides. Very quickly again, please do not forget to fill the evaluations if you're happy. If not, you don't have to fill it. No, just kidding. All right, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to see you tomorrow at 8:30 in room 272. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here.
Now, Raymond, we have to do this. Come on. And we got a couple of presents, especially the guys ask questions. If you are after some load balancers, please come and see me, free. And I got at least e-books. And even if you don't have any question, come enough. Maybe sometimes they don't pick it up, you know. Which one do you prefer, e-book or virtual load balancer, a real one? Get a book. If you need a load balancer, not for resale, come and see me. You ask me a question, and you ask, what would you like to prefer, a $4,000 load balancer or a free book?
Book.
No need for a load okay. Balancer. Anybody wants load balancer here? For the books, we don't have enough. Okay. Right. No. What I'm going to do is, please go to O'Reilly stand downstairs. Tell them that I sent you. Seriously. Tell them Erdl sent me. He didn't have enough e-books. All right? Everybody, if you're listening to me, go to O'Reilly downstairs. Tell them Erdl, the Australian strange-speaking guy, sent me here, and they will give you the book, okay? All of you. Bad luck if they didn't listen. I got one more load balancer to give away. $4,000 if you need one. If you're an exchange guy, link guy, yeah, go for it. You did already? This is not for resale, okay? Keep in mind.
So when we create, if we are developing
Thank you.
Desktop environment.
Mm-hmm.